You're listening to Understanding and Responding to Muslims by Dr. Warren Larson. Dr. Larson is the director of the Zwemer Center for Muslim Studies at Columbia International University's Seminary and School of Missions. This breakout session was recorded at the Apologetics Canada Conference on March 8, 2014 at Willingdon Church.
Okay, we're going to get started here. I want to welcome you all to this seminar. And just before we get started on the Muslim stuff, just tell you a little bit about myself. My wife and I went to Pakistan in 1968 to a place called DGK. And this is one of the poorest areas of Pakistan. You can see that it's surrounded by India, Afghanistan, and borders China as well. Over there, 3 years later, after arriving, we had a couple of sons. I'll tell you a little bit more about them later. But when you're in a Muslim setting, you know, it's always nice to have sons first. The work we did was primarily quite a bit to do with literature work. We gave out Christian literature. In those days, Pakistan was more free. Today, it's probably one of the most dangerous places to live in the world. And we had a Bible correspondence school, primarily, through which thousands of Muslims could study the Bible through correspondence, sometimes in the secrecy of their own homes, because Pakistan is somewhat restricted. So that's what we did. Then, after 23 years, I was accused of spying, and I had to leave, forced out. So for the next almost the same amount of time, I've been teaching in the area of Islam in the United States, preparing workers for the Muslim world. For a while, I was directing the Zwemer Center for Muslim Studies, organization to train workers for the Muslim world. So that's what I've been doing. And those two sons grew up. Mm-hmm. And about 3 years ago, we had all the grandchildren there. They have started a business here in Vancouver called EarthCast.com. And there are six grandchildren there. And then just over a year ago, another one arrived unexpectedly. So now we have seven reasons for moving back to Canada, and here's where we're going to stay. All right, the topic is understanding and responding to Muslims and in our midst. And I'm going to read a couple of verses from Acts 17, 26 and 27. It says, "From one man he made every nation of men, that they should inhabit the whole earth, and he determined the times set for them in the exact places where they should live. God did this so that men would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us." You get the impression from these verses that, you know, God has shifted people around. And when you come to think of it, some of the, you know, the Muslims that are in our midst, they never hear the gospel any other way. For instance, you've got 12,000 Saudi Arabian students in the United States universities. It's a good chance for them to hear the gospel. And so the immigrants are here. But there are other Muslims as well in the West. And I want to talk to you just for a few minutes, briefly, just a bit of a survey about some Muslims in the West, talk about some of the countries where they are. For example, talk about United States, first of all. In United States, most of the Muslims are immigrants, which makes sense, but some of them are African Americans. About 40% of the Muslims in the United States have turned to Islam on their own without anyone turning or holding a gun to their heads. And if you ask them why, they'd probably say something like this: our history and slavery. Those are some of the reasons. But they're not the only one converting. In some cases, women are converting to Islam as well. White women. And if you were to ask them, they might say something like, you know, in Islam, things are pretty rigid, pretty clear. Tells you when to pray, what not to do, what not to wear, and modesty and all of those things are pretty important. That's what they'd say. There's a lot of controversy in the States about veils and mosques. Should Muslims be allowed to build this mosque here? What about wearing a veil if you're going to work at McDonald's? There's been some controversy over things like that. But Islam is the fastest growing religion in the United States. And you know what? Muslims feel stereotyped and targeted. You can't see the sign maybe, but it says stop targeting Muslims. Because when you wear Muslim headdress, which women do, or if you have a good sized beard and you go through security at the airport, there's a good chance that you're going to be stereotyped. And so Muslims feel that. Because they say the wrongdoings of a few get us are everyone is condemning us for violence. Now let's talk about the UK. In the United Kingdom, there again are quite a few Muslims, mostly immigrants. There you have thousands who have converted to Islam, don't always stay Muslim. Sometimes they turn back to secularism. Lots of mosques, 1,700 mosques, many former churches, 1,200 Quranic schools, 85 Sharia courts, Muslim tribunals are there. And then, in some ways, Muslims are pretty confident in the UK. They put up signs like Islam is the future for Britain. But even then, many of them feel like they don't always fit in the UK. And you know, there's one place in Europe where those things there are forbidden. Minarets. Because they say if we allow these minarets, it's a sign of Islamic domination. You know where that country is? It was Switzerland. And now they've put restrictions on immigration. So in that sense, in that country as well, there's quite a bit of concern about Muslims. But the most controversial subject are the burqas. Sometimes they're disallowed in France or places like that. But there's nothing, you know, people that say nothing about the bikini. I'm not trying to corrupt your young, pure minds, but that's the truth. You see the burqas there plus the bikinis. And then Muslims have been quite creative. They've come up with a burkini, which is sort of halfway between a burqa and a bikini because they're so concerned about modesty. Now, don't look so close, you guys. Let's talk about Canada. Probably a million Muslims here. We're not exactly sure. But the primary non-Christian faith is Islam. 200 mosques, 3 TV stations, numerous radio programs. In Ottawa, in 30 years, Islam grew 128%, according to the Ottawa Citizen. Toronto, Montreal, Calgary, Edmonton have many Muslims, and now we understand 180,000 Muslims in the city in the greater area of Vancouver. Islam, according to my research, has grown 158% between 1981 and 91. But here again, Muslim women sometimes say, you know, we don't seem to fit in into society. Maybe it's because of the dress. We're marginalized in the mosque, they say, because, you know, we don't really have a part in the service. And so that's what they say. And I think if there was one word that would describe the sentiment of attitudes toward Muslims in the West, it would be fear. It's fear. And I'll tell you one of the reasons. Several years ago, shortly after 9/11, I had a chance to review some Christian books that had been written about Muslims. 7 of them, as a matter of fact, and it was published in Christianity Today. Most of the books were not very helpful because they were showing a lot of fear and paranoia. Didn't seem that they had a whole lot of love for Muslims. But the worst one was this one from 911 to 666. And the author said, the Antichrist is going to be a Muslim. And he described in vivid detail what would happen in a few years when Islam took over in the United States. It was full of things to make you fearful. But I have another story. More recently than that, in South Carolina, where I spent 17 years, one morning, a Muslim walked into a church. He sat at the back of the room, and he was taking notes while the pastor was speaking. And then at the end of the service, he came forward, and he started to argue with the pastor. The pastor wasn't prepared for the questions, because they were different questions, and he kept one hand in his pocket. And the pastor wondered, does that guy have a weapon? Then he stomped out and he said, you know, you're all a bunch of hypocrites. I'm not coming back. And one of the deacons said, maybe we're going to have to start bringing guns to protect ourselves. But the pastor thought maybe there's another way. So he invited me head of the Zwemer Center, and a few others to come and talk to the pastors. They had about 20, 25 of them together. For 2 to 3 hours, we talked to them. We encouraged them to start praying for Muslims, try to befriend Muslim neighbors. We had a young student there from Central Asia, from Muslim background, who had come to Christ and led most of her family to Christ. And she gave a thrilling testimony. But it was a gigantic struggle between faith and fear. And fear won out. The pastors were just too afraid. And so we're going to talk about bridges and barriers. Actually, barriers and bridges, to put it first. I'm going to read a couple of verses out of that same passage, same general area that I was talking about, Genesis, Acts 17, verses 2 and 3. As his custom was, Paul went into the synagogue, and on 3 Sabbath days, he reasoned with them from the scriptures, explaining and proving that the Christ had to suffer and rise from the dead. This Jesus I am proclaiming to you is the Christ, he said. You know what? I think if Paul was here today, he wouldn't beat up on Islam. He wouldn't demean Muhammad. He wouldn't demonize Muslims. But he would talk to them in a loving way with understanding, knowing what Muslims believe and what they practice. That's what Paul would do. That's what we need to do too, and we can learn how to do that, but we need to understand what exactly Muslims do believe. You know, it's quite amazing when you look at what they believe, how much we have in common with them. A lot of commonalities. And I want us to remember that. Also remember that love is the greatest apologetic. But you can't love someone that you're afraid of. So what do they believe? Let's look at some of the commonalities. Muslims believe there is one God. He's creator of all, heaven and earth. This guy's finger down here is that there is one God. That's really the strong point of Islam. And this God has given commands, and he will judge on the last day. Muslims believe that, just like we do. And Jesus is a prophet and a Messiah. Jesus is a prophet. He's one of the greatest prophets in Islam and the Messiah. And humans are weak and sinful, and they need God's mercy and forgiveness. And this is very important. The Torah, in other words, the first 5 books of the Bible, the Pentateuch, the Psalms, the Gospels, were all verbally inspired. And the original form were the inerrant word of God. They have different words for them. They call it the Torah, the Zabur, and Injil. They're all books of God. However, here's where we come into some barriers. Despite those commonalities, I want to talk to you about several barriers. The first one, and you'll see these barriers in the left-hand corner of the slide for your note-taking. The first one is the Bible. Despite what they believe about the Bible, about those things that we just mentioned, despite that, we have some problems. And this is what the first one is. They say that your Bible has been corrupted and is no longer trustworthy. And so we have to be prepared for that. We have to be prepared to show them that God protects his word. And how do we do that? Well, we're not going to do it by beating up on the Quran. I have my Quran with me, in case you're interested. It's about 2/3 the size of the New Testament. It's Arabic and English and commentary on top of that. That's why it looks so big. But I'm not going to critique the Quran. We have to be prepared to show that God protects his word. And one of the best ways to do that is to quote Jesus. The great prophet said in Matthew 5, 17 through 18, not one jot or tittle is going to be passed away until all be fulfilled. And there are other verses there too. And you know what? Even the Quran says in chapter 6 and verse 34 that no one can change the words of Allah. 114 chapters in the Quran. Sometimes you can use it with integrity. It's not a demon-possessed book. And sometimes you can use it, you can use it with profit. Even then, none can change the words of Allah. So we need to ask Muslims, when was it changed? Why was it changed? Or what? And why and by whom was it corrupt? Because they've heard so often from the mosques that it's been changed, but you really need to nail it down so Muslims can start to think through some of the charges that have been made. When, what, why, and by whom was it corrupted? The second barrier is God. Despite those things that we talked about, that Muslims believe he's creator, he's eternal, he's merciful, and all of those things, we have some problems when we begin to talk to Muslims about God. And you know, here are some verses from the Quran. Allah guides whom he will. 28 and verse 56. He asks hell, art thou filled? Almost like he's just waiting for the chance to fill hell up. And then it says, if we had so willed, we could have certainly brought every soul true guidance. Don't get carried away here with this wee bit. Because in the Quran, God is often in the plural. Not that they believe in the Trinity, but because they use the plural of majesty. You see, God is king. And so for respect, they use the plural. And often it's we in the Quran. But it says, if we so had so willed, we could have certainly brought every soul true guidance. And in essence, it's some to heaven, some to hell, and I care not. Is really what it should have said. I care not. So that's one of the barriers we have to deal with. And when you get in from the Quran and go to the traditions came after the Quran. This came in the 7th century, and then 150 years later came the traditions. The traditions are all that Muhammad said and did. It's worse. Listen to this. When God creates for paradise, he employs him in doing the deeds of those who will go to paradise. When he creates a man for hell, he employs him in doing the deeds of those who will go to hell. In other words, if one commits adultery, God must have planned it that way. And so this is really it is predeterminism at its worst. And so what do Muslims need to know about God then? What can we share with them? Well, that he's love. I wrote an article once, and I ended it this way. I said, Muslims know that God is all-powerful. Who will tell them that he's love? The Quran says that he loves basically the righteous, but we know that the Bible says he loves those who are sinners, and that's the beauty of it. And then there is the intimacy factor. In the Bible, it talks about how intimate God is with us. In Genesis 2, there he is walking and talking with Adam and Eve, which is really something. And Muslims know nothing about that. And in heaven, he is our focus. It says that when we see him, we'll be with him. We'll see his face. We won't need the sun or anything like that because God will be there. And that's why we're looking forward to heaven. For Muslims, there are going to be some other things in heaven. Wine, women, and song. God is going to be there, but not so much that one who will wipe away our tears. You see the intimacy factor. And then there's the holiness factor. 211 times in the Bible it says God is holy. In the Quran, it's only 4 times. Islam stresses his power. Even those 99 names of God stress his power. But in the Bible, it's his holiness. And then, last of all, his suffering. He was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and with his stripes we are healed. This is what God has done for us. And so these are some of the things that Muslims need to know about God. They already know a little bit. They already know some. We're not talking about another God. We're just wanting Muslims to know a little bit more about God. They know some of the things they know are true, but they need to know more. And then the third barrier is Jesus. Despite the fact that it says, you know, that he's prophet and Messiah, and despite the fact that if you look at the Quran, his birth is a virgin birth. You know, some Christians, some people who claim to be Christians don't believe in the virgin birth. But the Muslims do. There are 93 verses in the Quran here about Jesus. And when you look at the Quran, the virgin birth is there. And praise God for that. And it's not all that's there. There are things about the life and work of Jesus that are amazing. For instance, he's sinless. Muhammad isn't. He's a spirit from God. He's a sign unto men. He's the Messiah and the Word. And he's a miracle worker. I've had Muslims come to me and they say, Mr. Larson, in the Quran, I have heard that, and I've read that Jesus healed the sick, he cleansed the lepers, he raised the dead, and he did all these miracles. I'm interested in him. And so, what an opportunity. A few years ago, I wrote an article. It's called Jesus in Islam and Christianity, discussing the similarities and the differences. There are some similarities, but there are some differences. And now we're going to talk about those differences. Barriers, I guess you could call them. And this one hits us in the face. Here it is. Muslims say Jesus cannot be the Son of God. Now, I tell you, they're strong on this. They're strong. In fact, these are the verses. It's not fitting to the majesty that he should beget a son. In blasphemy, they say, Allah is Christ, the Son of Mary. No son did Allah beget, nor is there any God with him. And then almost at the end of the Quran, remember I said 114 chapters, almost the end of the Quran, 112, it says, he begetteth not, nor is he begotten. What in the world are Muslims thinking? Well, I'll tell you what they're thinking. But it's good to ask them rather than say to them, you know what, I know what you're thinking. It's good to ask Muslims, how do you understand this term, Son of God? The truth is, they're thinking physical. They're thinking God had a wife, according to the Christians, and he produced a biological son. No, my Muslim friend, that's not what we're saying. When we talk about the Son of God, we're talking about the spiritual son. But you see, Muhammad misunderstood it. It's in the Quran in black and white. He misunderstood it. And so Muslims too have misunderstood it. And so when we talk to Muslims and the Son of God comes up, which it will do, please be sure to patiently tell them that we're not talking about the physical Son of God, because we don't believe that any more than you do. Then the last barrier is sin. You know, the Quran, if we had time, we could look at some verses in the Quran that don't give such a rosy picture of humankind. But on the other hand, some verses are pretty positive. Look at this. He's the best of molds. Or, he's most good. Naturally pure. And when it comes to Adam, it says he forgot. God told him what to do, not to eat of the tree of the garden, but Adam had a short memory. And so he forgot. And he needs reminders, guidance, you know, tell him, remind him. And so in the end, basically, humans come out smelling like a rose. Now, it's true that there are other verses in the Quran that are not that positive, but the Quran basically seems to suggest that sin isn't a big problem. And so that's Islamic theology on sin. There is a fall, but it's with a small f. There is sin, but it's with a small s. And so we need to work on this. And basically there's reliance on the law. a show of righteousness. I've been pretty pleased with the recent messages in Willingdon here. They've been on the Pharisees, and in some ways Muslims are like that. If you say your prayers, you look good, you look pure, you keep your hair covered and stuff like that. That's righteousness. But they don't see the heart problem. And when you talk to Muslims about Mark 7, where Jesus said, out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, envy, and all of those things, they're confounded because they haven't heard anything like this. So that's the thing we need to tell them. But you see, because God is exalted in power, according to the Quran, he can forgive any sin he wants to. And he decides to, he can forgive it. Just like that. So we need to work on that. And we need to think about Muslims. Often they think of the scale. God has a scale. And he puts the good deeds on one side, the bad deeds on the other. We need to ask Muslims what they're putting on that scale and tell them that Jesus is the one that we put on the scale because he was perfect and sinless, as they know, and died a sacrificial death for our sins. You know, there are other questions to ask Muslims about this. Like, is the problem just cognitive? Remember Romans 7:20, what it says? Paul said, when I would do right, then I do evil. He says we've got this bias to do evil. We need to ask them, do we only need guidance? According to the Bible, we need reconciliation. We need reconciliation with that holy God. And even the Quran says that most go astray. 12 in verse 53 says the soul incites to evil. Why do most go astray? So sometimes we can use the Quran in witness. It's not necessarily something that we shouldn't know about. All right, those are the barriers. Now let's talk about a few bridges in the time that's left. One bridge is prayer and faith. Prayer and faith. I'm wondering how we've prayed since 9/11. I've been attending Sunday school classes in the States. You know what I found out? Oftentimes they've been praying for the troops. And I think that's okay. They need to pray for the troops. But they haven't prayed for Muslims. Because that's what Jesus asked us to do. Pray for our enemies. I would sometimes try to get them to pray for Muslims and the people that work with them. But I had trouble with it. We need to pray. And we need faith. What do I mean by faith? I mean that we need to understand that God is doing some things among Muslims today, and he wants to do things among Muslims today that he's never done before. In fact, in the last 20, 30 years, it's amazing what's been happening in the Muslim world. Let me tell you a little bit about it. Indonesia, great Meek people movements there, the largest Muslim country in the world. All kinds of people converted in Indonesia. Bangladesh, which used to be part of Pakistan. Remember I told you I've been in Pakistan. It used to be part of Pakistan. But because of some of the ways that they've been treated by fellow Muslims, when it was East Pakistan, lots of Bengalis have turned to Christ. And then in Central Asia, in those Stan countries up there where Christianity was forbidden under communism, once communism fell, there's been a tremendous movement to Christ in Central Asia among Muslims. And then the Berbers in North Africa. Heard about one village where one night everyone had the same dream about Jesus. In the morning they got up. They all accepted Christ. But the real country that I want to talk to you about is Iran. You know, we're scared spitless of Iran. We're scared of Iran because of nuclear stuff. But do you know that Iran is the greatest example of God working in the Muslim world that there is? I've got some books on my shelf. One of them just takes back about 30 years, and the name of the book is 10 Muslims Come Meet Christ. You know, that's a great thing. 30 years ago, 10 Muslims come to Christ. Now, today, you could have a book very easily that would say how 100,000 come to Christ. And this guy here, you know who he is? Ayatollah himself. Came to power in 1979. You know what the Christians say about him? He's the best missionary we ever had. Because he showed us what Islam was like. And during the time of Ahmadinejad, there was a lot of suffering in Iran. There still is. And yet God has somehow used that suffering to bring Iranian Muslims to himself. And Iranians are here too. I've met a lot of them, just even since the year that I've been here. And then we know these two girls, because here a few months ago, somebody showed this picture. A couple of Iranian girls came to Christ in Turkey, went back to Iran, they gave out 20,000 New Testaments, Persian. And then finally they were arrested and put in prison. For 259 days they were in an infamous prison in Tehran, and they were praying for people. And God was answering their prayers. And then, miraculously enough, they were released, even though they were condemned to death twice. This is just some of the things that God is doing in Iran. Praise God for that. Now, the other bridge is love and forgiveness. You know what? Some of our evangelism among Muslims is the way not to evangelize. Look at this. Abortion is murder. Homosexuality is sin. Islam is a lie. Now, how in the world would anyone want to put those three together? I don't know. And in Detroit, where there's the Arab festival, here's a guy with a pig on a pole, because he wants to antagonize Muslims. You know, Muslims don't eat pig meat. So here he puts a pig on a pole. He walks around, Jesus, the Son of God. This is not the way to evangelize. This guy here is praying for the devils and the demons to flee, but it's not the way of love and forgiveness. I want to tell you a story about love and forgiveness. 1979, when I was in Pakistan, one morning I heard on the BBC that there had been some trouble in Saudi Arabia at the mosque. And so I didn't think much of it. I listened to the BBC all the time. And then at 10 o'clock, somebody came around. It was November the 20th, knocked on the door, and they said, "Mr. Larson, there are processions down there against Americans and Jews in the bazaar, in the marketplace. Don't go down there." And so I said, "No, we're fine. We're not going to go down there." Just a couple of minutes later, we heard a mob coming. So closed our doors. There were two families there living side by side. I was Canadian. There was an American family. We closed our doors, and then we heard the mob starting to beat our old Land Rovers with bricks and smashing them. And then they broke in on one side of the house. And so I thought, well, they're going to get us eventually, so we might as well go out and meet them. And so we went out to meet them, and they were afraid. They fled at first. And then I looked around the corner, and there were 200 of them. So I said, "You can't take on 200 rioters. So I held my hands in the air, and I said, "Hey, guys, I'm not an American. I'm not a Jew. I'm Canadian." And they said, "Well, that's no difference." I suffered as a Canadian for being an American, which I wasn't at the time. And then, about 3 days later, the news came out that the takeover of that mosque in Mecca, that siege of the mosque in Mecca, had not been Americans and Jews after all. It was a work of Muslim insurgents, radicals. And at the time, some of the rioters who attacked us and burned our jeeps and destroyed a whole bunch of stuff, they were put in prison. And we went to the prison and we forgave them. And my neighbors came to me and they said, "Mr. Larson, now we understand the difference between you and us." I said, "What difference?" They said, "You forgive your enemies. We tend not to forgive those who do things like that against us." You know what? After that, we saw more fruit. After that, we saw more Muslims respond to the gospel. And there seemed to be more credibility after that. Now, the last one is knowing and doing. You know, we need to know. This is a bridge. We need to know about Islam. We need to understand what this black robed holy Kaaba is. We need to understand that a lot of what Muslims do with their eyes facing the east, Mecca, that we need to do. But we need to do more than just know. You know, I've been teaching Islam now for so many years, but I think sometimes we're quite interested to know about Islam and to study Islam, but how many of us are interested in actually befriending Muslims? This is the secret. And you know what? Most of the Muslims who've ever come to Christ in history have done so because of the love and friendship of a Christian. That's the statistics. So we need to think of that. We need to remember that. I want to close with this story. Some of you will remember this. This is famous. In 1984, this young lady got onto the front page of National Geographic. It was her eyes that really... And people said, "Where is that woman? We want to find her again." And so the photographer, whose name was Steve McCurry, he was looking for her. 17 years later, he found that woman. And there she is, found after 17 years, an Afghan refugee story. She didn't know that she was looking, had been looked for. She didn't want to be found, but she was found. And I think in the same way that Muslims need to be found, and God is looking for them. He wants to find them and bring them home. And I guess if I wanted to get anything across to you today, it would be that God is finding Muslims today, and we can be part of it. We can cooperate with Him in finding Muslims and bringing them home. They may not always know that they're being looked for, but they are. And by the way, a lot of them are refugees. So that's it. You know what? Got a few minutes for questions, and that is perfect because I didn't realize that we'd have time for questions. So now we're going to take a few questions. I think you're first.
My impression is that there are so many different factions and sects within the Muslim faith, and some of them seem radical, some of them fairly moderate. Is there a fundamental difference in how to deal with these different people?
Well, yes. Let's remember that most of them are not radical.
Yeah.
You know that, and just a few of them are. There are 1.5 billion Muslims in the world. Most of them are just like us. They're good neighbors. They're hard workers. They're trying to get their kids through school. They love, they love other people. So I think that the best way to deal with Muslims is just to find out what they do believe. I personally don't think that there's so much Islam as there are Islams. In other words, there's a lot of different views. Basically Muslims are quite varied in their beliefs. And so it's best to just ask them some things about their faith and about their country and about their religion and stuff like that when you get a chance, and let them tell you. And then through the friendship, the love and the friendship that they see, and I'm sure this lady, young lady here, has friends among Muslims. And then when you get the chance, give your testimony of how God saved you and how you have peace and forgiveness of sins. That's the only thing I can think of. Yes?
Warren, can you comment on a local radio program, Fortress of Faith, Jim Wallace?
Which one?
Fortress of Faith.
Yes, I know Wallace. He took one of my classes a few years ago. Yes, I think it's very apologetic. My only concern is that he hasn't had a whole lot of experience with Muslims himself, where I think that to really get to know Muslims, you have to live with them. You have to have experience with Muslims, and then you can talk knowledgeably about the trouble with Islam. I know that there are holes you can pick in Islam, including the Quran, but also radical Islam and stuff like that. So I would say that I'm a little bit leery of apologetics. This today is a conference apologetics, but my own sense is that I like Paul did. He reasoned with them. He explained the scriptures. He was almost like it was a Q&A thing when you look at the Greek word that he uses there in Acts. And so my own sense is that we need for love and friendship more than we need beating up on Islam. That's my attempt. Sorry.
Just maybe a word of testimony. I was a Muslim. I was a Berber, the Norwegian Berber. I went the last 2 years. And I remember in the 1980s, in 1990, when I first accepted Jesus Christ, I was the first one to go back to my community. And I remember with tears in eyes, I said, "Oh Lord, how come? Am I really the one who is just on the right way? What about all these people?" But the thing that I realized that, of course, the strength came from the Lord, and I got my family, and we were like a group of managers, and we prayed a lot. We can say we prayed a lot. And now when I went back in 2012, in the same community, in every village, we have 13 couples, families believing in Jesus Christ. There are a lot of Berbers there believing in Jesus Christ. And I have my brother who is working full-time as an evangelist through the CNA and through... and he got a lot of letters, and people are thirsty. We have gone through the hell of civil war in Nigeria because of the fundamentalist. And people are thirsty. People want to know who is God. Yeah. I remember when I was working in company, equivalent to BC Hydro, and I remember one guy coming to see me, and he said, "You know what, Ines? If I have to take all these guys with birds and in the 1980s, I would take the Christians because I see that God is with you. He's not a believer." So the thing is, I think that probably would agree with me. When we take Muslims as a group, it's very hard to convince them. Because there is a feeling of community. The strength comes from the members, which is not really necessarily right, especially in the Bible. You know? And also when we talk to Muslims, it's good not to maybe to talk to many people, to take one by one. Right. And also to know the Bible, to know, of course, that the Quran is good to know. And the trap, maybe the trap is just going, arguing with God, Jesus and Muhammad and everything. But I think the thing that prayer is very important. And I think that God is doing a wonderful job through visions, through revelations. Yeah. And I know people who have got like visions of God. You know, just maybe a word, just to make it clear. There is a website, if you can just go there. It's like dreamsandvisions.org. You will find a lot of testimonies of people coming to Jesus Christ through spiritual.
Right. Excellent advice. The one-on-one, I showed the picture of the girl talking to another woman. Yes, your question, and that's all.
Okay. I spend a lot of time with Muslims, and I've got, like, it's come to a point where we feel like they've called me, and I've called them brother and sister.
Right.
One conversation I had with one of my friends was, he's seeking truth.
Right.
And he did pray, like, "Jesus, if you are the truth, would you reveal yourself to me?"
Right.
We walked away from that conversation, and he said, "Have you ever prayed to the God of Muhammad? And have you ever asked that he would reveal himself to you?" And I felt like, how do I respond to that?
Yeah, well, I mentioned before that I don't think it's another God.
No,
I don't think it's another God. It's the same God. It's no use getting into that, as some of them do, demonizing Allah and saying that, you know, he's another God. It's another God who's always the devil or something like that. It doesn't have to help. Just stick with God, what he knows, and to pray, and you pray. God is going to reveal himself to him. He knows a little bit, but it's almost like by his question he's thinking that they're different. It doesn't help us to think it's another God.
Right.
There are so many differences. I've pointed out some of them, but just keep working and praying and I think he's going to come to the truth if he's seeking it. It sounds like this. Yeah, I think Claudia wants us to quit, don't you, Claudia? It's 1 o'clock, I'm sorry. I will be around. And by the way, I wanted to say that if anybody wants to, here is my... yes. I don't know, that's salvation. There it is. WLarson@CIU.edu. You see, human can make mistakes, they can't say. All right. Good to see you. Missed. You're dismissed.